the Puck Guys Podcast, the best place for top hockey news and insight with, of course, a little West Coast bias. Now, here are your hosts, Patrick Mahoney and Jason Lamb.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode, a playoff episode of the Puck Guys Podcast.
Look at that. We're still around.
Oh, hey, man. Gosh. Week to week.
Yes, absolutely.
Week to week. We take this week to week. We don't know if we're still going to be employed further. Week to week. We look at it every day. We're like,
whoa. We're
employed. Are we welcome back?
To the podcast world?
Yeah, to all the money we don't make.
We're the slave to that nonprofit podcast.
So, thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I know we're four games at least for every series in. Game fours are going on.
Game fours now.
Yeah. And then some future game fours starting tonight later. Plenty of action going on. Plenty of upsets happening, it seems like. One definite, a few on the way, maybe. We'll see what happens. Some suspensions. A very heavy-handed Department of Player Safety week.
They are not.
They've had a lot of reviews.
They are not messing around when it comes out to doling out players sitting for a while.
And then a couple of coaches being fired, although one we didn't talk about when we should have.
Yeah.
Another one retired. A planet left the solar system.
You said one.
Just because that was the most ridiculous thing you've ever said on the show.
Oh, don't turn this on me.
It was ridiculous, but it was funny. And then the Flames fired Glenn Gullison for throwing a stick in practice as a temper tantrum. They fired him at the end of the year. Probably not the reason why, but it made me laugh when I thought of that. I was like, maybe you shouldn't damage the arena, bud.
Yeah.
You know, Glenn.
Yeah, that thing's barely hanging together as is.
Yeah, thanks, Glenn.
Right?
That suffered enough flood damage from years ago.
Exactly.
Now you're going to be throwing your stick up into the stands.
It's a sore subject with the city of Calgary.
Unreal. Yep. So we'll give you some playoff updates, some suspension issues, and we'll talk real quick about the coaching things. But first, you guys should be going over to thegruelingtruth.net for all your sporting needs, podcasts, articles, blog posts. Check them out. We're slowly gathering an army of hockey fans and hockey podcasts on there. We just picked up another one this week, an NHL show. Mm-hmm. So go check them out, the Fourth Line Podcast. And then we still have the Bruins show, Black and Gold. So check them out as well. Good stuff. We definitely need more. So like we said before, if you know anybody, tweet at us, the Puck Guys. Tweet at Jason or tweet at me. You guys know where to find us. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram too. Just let us know if you want to write.
Yeah.
That's the big one.
Yeah.
If you listen and you don't think you're great at writing, then you're in the same ballpark Jason and I are in, who wrote last week
horribly.
Or a week before. That was last
horribly.
Week. Yeah. So if you think you're not great, but you want to do it, just do it. That's what we did.
Just
and
do it.
We got eaten alive, but it's okay.
Yeah. Just do it, and you'll already be better than us.
So do that, and then we'll put you on a website that gets hundreds of thousands of views per month. So that's great exposure for you. And eventually it'll be good enough to where nobody will laugh at you anymore, and maybe you'll get a couple of comments that are positive. We've yet to see those.
Yeah.
For us, personally. Yeah. But no, Grueling Truth is a great place to go. Mike runs that show over there. He's awesome, and he'll promote you and make you ready for success, really. He'll put your stuff on the spotlight when you need it to be. So hit us up.
All right. You can stop buddying up to him here.
He doesn't listen.
That nose is getting awfully brown.
Well, let's hop into hockey then.
So,
plenty of series updates. Mm-hmm. I think we should start with Nashville and Colorado. This is something I thought was going to be heavy-handedly a sweep by Nashville. I think I predicted a sweep.
Me too.
And it's not happening because the Hart Trophy candidate and future runner-up, Nathan MacKinnon, for the Hart Trophy.
Future runner-up.
It's just destroyed Game 3. And Game 4 is happening tonight. But they trail the Predators 2-1. Mm-hmm. This has been a great series so far.
Shockingly. I would have been about the only bone I would have probably thrown Colorado at any point was like, oh, yeah, they'll probably lead at some point in one game somewhere. They've led in every single game. And the first two games in Nashville, that's the way you start it. Score on your first shot in both games to take a lead and kind of silence the crowd. Sadly, it's not to be, as they end up losing both of those games, but they do come back home, and they really kind of shellack Nashville and actually chase Vezina Trophy finalist.
Winner. He's going to win.
Probably winner, in our opinion. And Pekarinen ends up getting shelled for 4 goals in just a little over a period of play. And gets an early exit, and the Colorado Avalanche actually have a win in this series at home. Still trail 2-1, but it's been damn impressive to watch them go, you know, David versus Goliath and really kind of be, you know, look like they belong there is one real good way to put it. It's been interesting to say the least from a goaltender's perspective, which is my area of expertise. You can't see, but there's quotation marks around expertise.
Always floating quotation marks with Jason Talks.
Especially with me. Yeah, if I claim to know anything, there's always a quotation. Or
like he's like, I don't claim to be an expert, but let me tell you exactly what the truth is.
Yeah, let me break it down for you simpletons. But no, it's been absolutely wrong. Just the way the goalies are playing. Pecorine comes in, 42 wins. I think tops in save percentage, goals against average, or at least top three with everything going on. He's got through, before the game they're going to have tonight, the game four, through three games, he's got an 86-1 save percentage.
That's 86. Worse than John Gibson, everybody.
I'm in two beer leagues and have a better save percentage than Pecorine does. I also have a lower goals against. His is 4.15. It's north of four goals a game against the eighth seed, the last team to actually get into the playoffs. That's absolutely incredible.
Are those numbers for real? That's not just from game three. That's from all three games combined.
That's everything combined.
Here I am checking NHL.com just to verify
you. You know what? This is probably a great thing you should have checked out before we got on the podcast. But, you know, if you think, he's doing so horrible, it just must be that the Colorado guy, Jonathan Bernier, is doing all that much better. He's not. He's barely better. He's at 88.3 save percentage through the three games. His goals against is just south of four at 3.72. This is just all offense at this point. It's surprising considering how great defensively Nashville is supposed to be, a juggernaut, especially in the playoffs, where it's supposed to be even less. But you got a 5-3 game, a 5-4 game, a 4-3 game or something like that. I think Nashville scored five goals, and three goals. I think it was 5-2 or 5-3 the first game. But anyways, digressing. It's all offense at this point. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of great goaltending. And quite frankly, Pecorine looks shaky to give up the first goal on, and they aren't like stellar shots. I mean, they're kind of from the middle up high, quickish, but somebody should have. I wonder, and I ask you as a non-goalie, do you think this is something that kind of transfers into tonight's game and throughout the series? Because he's had three games, and he's just – the numbers aren't there. Not Vezina, definitely nowhere near any of the other goalies that are leading their series.
If they get blown out tonight, you're going to see Juuse Saros in.
He did come in relief after Pecorine was pulled after giving up the fourth goal. He did not give up a goal, went a perfect 18 for 18. Eventually, Colorado ended up getting an empty net goal late in that game to seal game three. But Saros, in my opinion, is a very good backup, much like Carter Hutton was behind Pecorine as well. I mean, they've got good backups. So if there is a little bit of a falter, Saros is definitely a possibility.
100%. But, I mean, if you're looking at this team, Peter Laviolette's not going to throw in his backup goalie in a pivotal game four. They're up in the series 2-1. Mm-hmm. But if he gets chased, again, why not start Saros on the road in game five?
Well, they wouldn't
back at home on game five. I mean, if Pekka gets chased two games in a row, that's a big problem. Yeah. And maybe you could take a look at your backup. But then again, there's weird things with coaching. They're just going to throw another guy back in. No. He's our starter. He's our Vezina candidate. He deserves another chance. It's his series to win. So game five at home is going to go to Pekka again. That could be the case.
That could be the case. And the biggest problem I've always had with Pecorine, besides his injury thing, is that if he doesn't have that elite defense in front of him, he doesn't necessarily do as well. He's got skill, but it's inconsistent. And so last year, as far as the playoffs went, they barely got into the playoffs, and then they just went lights out tournament style. This year, they were the President Trophy winner, but behind a swagger and a great defense, that should have translated into a stomping Colorado, and it just hasn't happened. And those numbers is really tough to win series if you're going to keep up those numbers. So he's definitely got to step up his game. We'll see if it carries over because he can be streaky like that. Bad, streaky, and good.
Well, let's put it on the show. Write it in stone.
Mm-hmm.
In audio stone. We both predicted a sweep. Stupid. I had to have a stupid comment.
Yeah, you got a couple now.
Is it going to be game five, game six, or game seven when the series closes and who wins?
I, right. I'm so torn.
I'll definitely say Nashville in six at this point for me.
All right. I'm willing to go five. I think they could probably, you know, that last one was a little blip. Everyone kind of has that moment. But the fact that Bernier is not exactly killing it either on the other end, I think at some point, maybe last game was Nashville's little wake-up call. Hey, let's tighten things up on defense. Let's really kind of just push it on them. And they're always a threat to put up multiple goals within a game. So I still have Nashville winning, and I would say in five, just they didn't get that that first one at home.
All right, let's talk about the Minnesota Wild and the Winnipeg Jets. Very physical series. There was a
fun
suspension
series
because of this. Of what happened with the physicality in this, with Morrissey actually gets a cross check on Eric Staal's head, his face, neck area. No call on the play. Gets suspended one game for that.
Yeah.
That's the hot topic news on this. Right now, the Jets lead this series 3-1. Game five is tomorrow. Yeah, it's tomorrow.
No, game five is on Friday.
It's on a Friday. Yeah. Okay, got moved to the other day. So yeah, it's Friday. Let's hop on the Department of Player Safety bandwagon for this one real quick. We can kind of break them up by series. Makes more sense.
Yep.
So how did you feel about that? To me, it was pretty egregious. I tweeted out on our Puck Guys Twitter that it was going to be a one game just because that's what the NHL does. It's a one game.
Yeah.
I felt it should have been more, at least two or three, because he didn't get a 5 and a 10. He got nothing in that game.
Yeah.
Morrissey got away with it. Yeah. So the league felt it was, well, no injury on the play. He didn't mean to.
Certain criteria.
Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Stash is having a rough year up in the Department of Player Safety. So I felt it should have been two or three. Where do you feel that?
I'd agree with that. And the fact that it was, you can say all you want, oh, I didn't mean to hit him. But you looked at him, and then you made the hit. So if you missed your target and you're that horrible, you're going to get a little bit more than that. One game, I would say, is bare minimum. Obviously, I'm not going to go Kadri status and start going three or four games
if
off of that.
If this happened immediately, I think it happened in the first period, didn't it?
I can't quite remember.
I have to go back and look. But if it happened at the beginning of the first period and he got a 5 and a 10 and gone,
yeah,
that's one game. And then another game, yeah, okay. But the fact he got nothing, a one game kind of seems like he should probably miss two games.
Yeah, and especially since he ended up assisting, I believe, on the game-winning goal for that game three or game four. That kind of a little bit salt in the wound on top of that. So now his team is already kind of sitting pretty at 3-1. They may not miss him necessarily so much in that game five. However, yeah, it felt more like it should be two. Anyone that makes that type of hit that's so obviously head contact and reckless, I have a much bigger problem than with someone who tries for a clean hit and it goes south like a Doughty or something like that. I have more leniency for someone trying to make a hockey play versus trying to cross-check up high. What was the best he could hope for? Catch him in the shoulder?
That's what they're trying to say. Try him in the shoulders and the numbers.
But it's just that seems too high, too close to the head, and too easy to miss, and that's a reckless play, and it resulted in a cross-check. Next time, I guess Staal should just be injured and not come back.
So the incident happened late in the first period. So it still happened in the
first
period.
See, I told you.
And the Wild were already on the power play. That would have made it a 5-on-3.
You can't give a penalty against a 5-on-3.
Yeah, I know.
You can't give them another advantage. Then it just looks like you want the other team to win.
My problem with this is it's like, how do the referees miss that? And a 5-on-4, you don't see a guy get decked in the middle of the ice. It was in front of the net in the slot.
Yeah.
Don't you watch that area for rough and violent checks all the time?
At least someone, one of the two.
Dude, you missed it. He got decked in the head. Like,
yeah.
That happens. You can comment as a linesman,
yeah,
as to what's going on in the game.
I mean, he can't really call it, and he can't really, you know, the linesman can't blow the play dead and then run over and go like, dude, you should call a penalty. It was totally one.
I think there is a way where they can call a penalty.
Yeah, if it's over the glass, delay game.
Maybe that's all.
Yeah, or the face.
If someone knows better than us, let us know. But anyway, someone should have said something because that was horrific.
Yeah. Now, linesmen are somewhat limited in what they can actually call. But at the same time, you would think the down low guy referee should be able to kind of look, hey, I'm down low, I'll take what's going on down low here. And usually on a power play, it's the fight in the middle. And so you pay attention to that. And then the ref up high maybe pays attention a little bit more to slashing or what's happening in the high in the zone. I would assume that's what they would do. So how that got missed is kind of mind-boggling because it was right in the middle, no one else around him, and a clean cross-check to the jaw. So I don't know.
Yeah, I would have been happy with two games. One was a little short for me.
Yeah.
How do you see this series shaking out? I think it's done. I think the Wild don't have a chance. You get the Bruce Boudreau curse in the playoffs, according to everybody and their mother. Dubnyk hasn't been bad.
No, Dubnyk hasn't.
He's got a .930 save percentage.
Yeah, he's not. He's at .93 save percentage, 2.54. So I mean, 2.5 goals a game. Hellebuck, you would think, has been completely outplaying him, being up 3-1 in the series. He's been pulled. Since he got pulled in after the second period of game 3, which they got shellacked, he gave up 6 goals in 2 periods, he came back and posted a shutout. So you'd think his number would be astronomical compared to Dubnyk. So Dubnyk's got 93 save percentage. Hellebuck's got 90. And just barely. He's actually 8.99. And his goals against is pretty much the same. It's 2.46, so they're not even 0.1 difference in goals against average. Here's the difference. Shots. Winnipeg, coming into this, led in almost every category between goals. They were second in the NHL on offense. Shots, goals against, everything was just astronomical in favor of Winnipeg. So Winnipeg in this series has shot at Dubnyk 142 times. Hellebuck and his in relief, Steve Mason, 96 combined. So you're talking about 48 different more shots for Dubnyk. That means Minnesota would have had a shot 12 more times in each game just to tie them in shots. So that's a giant out shooting differential. Quick little question here for you, real quick. Out of all of this, dang it, I already gave you the numbers. Dang it, I already screwed up my own thing. Who do you think has the better save percentage?
Oh, well, Devin Dubnyk.
Nope, wrong. Good. You're wrong. Steve Mason does. He stopped all 7 shots in relief for Hellebuck in that game 3. So Steve Mason is actually leading the NHL in save percentage.
Oh, with 7 saves.
Oh, actually, I take that back. Saros now is too. So he's got 18 saves and 100% save percentage. Anyways, shots are the big reason why Winnipeg is leading over Minnesota. It's just an onslaught, too much offense. There's not the Ryan Suter on defense for Minnesota. And add into that, Zach Parise is also now listed as injured with some sort of sternum injury. There's no clear-cut definition of whether or not he's going to return in this series or in the next game. He's got a little bit of extra time to kind of rest up, but if he goes down, he's been a catalyst for them, especially in this series. I think he's got a couple goals already. That's going to be real rough on top of that. So I still say Winnipeg in 5, which I believe my original prediction was Winnipeg in 6.
Yeah, at 6.
So they might accelerate that with the additional loss of Zach Parise.
I had a sweep, but I think it's 5 now. And now Parise's gone with a broken
It better
sternum.
Be 5. I don't think they can they do any better.
Right. So no sweeps so far that we predicted until we get to this next series.
Yeah.
We're looking at the Vegas effing Golden Knights.
They need to stop being good.
They are probably just the most unpredictable team, right? Or they should be the most predictable because they're doing everything that everybody says they can't do.
I'm tired of being wrong.
I saw Ryan Whitney. Uh-huh. Right? Former defenseman.
Yeah, for the Ducks.
He was on
Pittsburgh.
Barstool Sports, and he was talking today. He's like, I have a shit ton of money, and I'm losing all my money on this team because they just swept the Kings. He goes, I bet against them every single game. Game 1, they're not going to win.
Yeah.
Game 2, the Kings are definitely going to take a split. Game 3, no, they're definitely going to win this out at home.
We got Doughty back.
They can't get swept. It's impossible. Oh. Game 4, they're going to come back and get one at home. It's not going to end in 4. And they get swept.
Unbelievable.
And at no fault. As much as I would love to crush
you would.
Jonathan Quick.
Uh-huh.
As much as I'd love to crush that guy.
Which you do.
He was outstanding.
I'm sorry.
Outstanding in this series.
Beg your pardon. Say it one more time.
He was outstanding.
Oh, would you say hashtag elite?
No, because he didn't face any elite shooters.
What?
I don't know if I would call William Carlson.
Who held to just one goal.
Elite shooter.
Right. Okay.
Or James Neal or Eric Halla, elite shooters.
Okay.
Wait till he faces like... I don't know. The Sharks have way more elite shooters and forwards than I think the Vegas Golden Knights do.
Okay.
So there you get kind of feel my prediction for round 2.
Okay.
The Golden Knights, though, crushing it. That was unreal. To get 4 in a row, to be the first ever NHL franchise to win a playoff series in their first attempt, and to sweep is just unreal.
To not have to already be out of the first round and just kind of waiting around. I think they had a their Twitter put out is like, so lonely here in the second round. It's just like waiting around. Like, anyone else want to join? Like, this part's kind of easy, I guess. That is insane. The numbers put up by Fleury. I mean, this was touted as a great goaltending matchup, and it absolutely, for a sweep, it is was absolutely hands down one of the best goaltending duels in this playoffs. If you look at the loser in this playoff, and that's Jonathan Quick, I think he finished with a 9.47 save percentage.
And a 1.55 GAA, goals against average.
That is leaps and bounds ahead of even the best other goalie in any other series.
Says the best save percentage in league history through four losses in a playoffs history, according to NHL Public Relations.
Oh, it yeah. I mean, no doubt in my mind. To also put it in perspective, he ended up, let's see, in 2012 in the finals, he gave up 7 goals on 132 shots. This series, which he got swept and didn't win the cup, he let in 7 goals again at 131 shots instead of 32. He's putting up insane numbers. In 2012 is when he won the Conn Smythe for playoff MVP. So he had a playoff MVP round and couldn't get a single win. Every Kings player needs to stand in a very long line and apologize personally to his face.
The Kings were vastly outplayed. Like, there wasn't even a chance for them in this series. I felt like right out the gate Vegas was all over them, flying. There was a couple of games in LA, or both those games in LA rather, where I felt like the Kings had some chances against Fleury and they weren't able to capitalize. But you look at this, the Golden Knights outchanced them 112-82 at 5-on-5. So 5-on-5, for those of you who need perspective, that's the most time that your players are on the ice, and to get that many chances against in 4 games is incredible. And the way that Quick handled himself is also otherworldly here. And that's a lot coming from me because I don't like the guy.
You hate giving him compliments.
Vegas had 41 high danger scoring chances in 4 games compared to LA's 25. So high danger, think of the faceoff circles in the zone in front of Quick, the dots in the faceoff circles down in front of the crease.
So think of the LA the LA symbol, that shield. That shield is the home plate.
Yeah, just pair it up right in the middle from the circles down to the crease. Unreal. The fact that he had to face that many chances and was able to stand on his head, just unbelievable. And an unfortunate play happened here for the Kings. God, I hate defending the Kings. But I'm going to have to.
It seems I'm to pain
have to.
You
I had them picked
internally
to win this series in 6. Obviously, I have no chance of that happening because it's done.
What?
But Drew Doughty takes...
There's always hope, bro.
He takes a run at Carrier on the Vegas Golden Knights, clips what I thought was his shoulder first a little. Yeah. Yes, it was minor. And then clipped the chin. Yeah. Carrier had run Doughty at least 4 times in that game and crushed him.
Yeah.
So Doughty was a little pissed, had a chance to get a catch a guy with his head down. Get suspended for a game, which, I mean, come on. I mean, maybe Vegas wins anyway, but I mean, Doughty, the best defenseman on the Kings and probably the best defenseman in the Western Conference. I mean, he's right there with Brent Burns. I think he's better than Brent Burns. So for me, he's the best defender in the Western Conference, right?
Yeah.
I think he is.
He's definitely that upper echelon.
Maybe right there with PK.
Yeah.
He and PK.
PK and, you know, other people on Nashville.
No. Just
okay.
He and PK.
Okay.
Yossi. I don't think that should have been suspendable. The guy has no history.
No.
And I just, they want to give him that because they gave Cogliano that kind of play.
No.
It's like, we got to keep it even. If we're going to call that kind of hit, we're going to call that kind of hit. But the problem I have with it is Cogliano's was actually technically late. Doughty's was not. Carrier had the puck. I felt like the hit was shoulder first, clipped part of the shoulder and hit his head. Carrier didn't miss games. He comes back and plays. That put the Kings in a big hole. They're already without Muzzin for the beginning part of the series. Those are 2 top defenders. Yeah. I hate defending the Kings here, right? As a Ducks fan, I know I'm an NHL fan too. So I got to call it as I see it. I thought the league blew the call there.
There's a couple of different interesting factors that people may not be aware of. One is that come playoff time, players aren't actually technically paid. Their salaries
can't be fined.
They cannot be fined. So this is something that, in my opinion, happened. If it happened in the regular season, you're looking at a fine, not a suspension. So the NHL is left, or the Department of Player Safety is left with 2 options, and that is do absolutely nothing, let what happened happen, or send a signal, hey, you can't do this, we're going to give you a suspension. Drew Doughty released a statement after the suspension, after calling it BS, that him and the Department of Player Safety had agreed on absolutely every single aspect of that hit, with one exception, and that was Doughty says that he changed his body position just prior to contact. The Department of Player Safety didn't see that, so they ended up giving him a game, but and that was much to Doughty's surprise. He thought that, he said, look, if you look at his skates, he shifts his weight. He's about to cut back through the middle at the last minute, and that's why I barely clip his shoulder instead of getting it all together. So I can see that as well. I've kind of been on the fence as far as whether it's suspension-worthy, whether it's not. After reading all of that, reviewing everything, I agree with you and with Doughty. Doesn't pain me as much to say it as it does you, but I don't think it was suspension worthy in a playoff game for that hit, and it was a critical suspension because the Kings and the Vegas Golden Knights went to double overtime the next game, and if the Kings win that, or Doughty's in there and is a factor in that game, we're talking about a completely different series. So it did have a relatively great impact after looking at it at the end of this series, but at the same time, it's just... What do you do? I mean, for me, that was just kind of that teetering point, and they just had a difference of opinion on whether or not he changed where, you know, his body position just prior to impact.
So Vegas now awaits the winner of the San Jose and Anaheim series, which we're going to get to here in a bit. I want to go over to the Eastern Conference and kind of roll through these relatively quickly. We are a Western Conference, or West Coast bias show, so we're definitely going to cover
you guys,
but. Just real quick here, Tampa Bay, New Jersey. Tampa Bay is leading that series 2-1. There's a game going on right now, which they're also leading. Mm-hmm. Taylor Hall, I mean, he dragged the carcass that is New Jersey to the playoffs. And he has 6 points, including the points he has in this game in four games. A pretty damn incredible guy. But it more or less feels like if you stop Taylor Hall at this point, you're going to stop the Devils.
Pretty much, mostly because, you know, the last update I had is it was a 2-1 New Jersey lead here in game four. And Taylor Hall is the only one on the Devils with multiple goals. Everyone else has been doing one goal, and that includes a Game 3 win where they scored 5 goals. One of the other sad parts of this is Kincaid was such a great goalie. Obviously, I'm going to go to the goalie side of things.
Oh, he's been lit up.
He got lit up. He had an 80.4 save percentage.
Worst in the NHL playoffs.
Unbelievable. Was spelled by Schneider in Game 2. Schneider starts in Game 3. Actually wins, and that's his first win since 2 days after Christmas, people. since his win on December 27th, Schneider went 0-10-2, got injured. Kincaid kind of helped propel them, as well as Hall, into the playoffs, but he faltered heavily against this powerful new Tampa Bay team. The depth of Tampa Bay is good. Not only Kucherov at this point had 8 points, but Killorn had 4 goals. Tyler Johnson, all these guys, I mean, they're just rolling lines, and that's kind of what I felt was going to happen, is that they're just too deep, and New Jersey is somewhat reliant heavily on what Hall can do. And he can do a lot, but he can't do it all in a playoff series where it's Tampa Bay versus New Jersey. And Vasilevskiy's still got a 93 save percentage, a 2.67 goals against average. That's a goalie who's going to win a playoff series. Even though Schneider had a good bounce back first game three, it's just
he's having a great game four right now. They're losing 2-1, and it's 4 minutes to go, 3 minutes and 40 seconds in the third, and it's still 2-1. Both goals scored in the first period.
All three goals scored. And even New Jersey started that. So Kucherov assisted and scored at this point, with standing up to be the game differential, game winning goal.
So you had Tampa in six. I had Tampa in five.
It could go either way.
No, I'm thinking I'm going
to run. I'm still going to go. Yeah, I would still say it could go six. It would be tough for New Jersey to come back in and do that. But the fact that they're holding them to 2-1 tells me that it's not Kincaid like it was the first two games in Tampa Bay. So we'll see if Tampa Bay has to go back to lovely and beautiful New Jersey.
Which everyone loves.
Yeah, who doesn't?
Boston and Toronto. Let's get to that series. Very interesting one, because we thought this was going to be a quick series based off the first two games. Boston,
not you. You picked seven.
I know. But, I mean, just after watching the first two games, Boston leads the series 2-1. Yeah. Two giant wins at home. They scored 12 goals over those two games, only giving up four. Just an absolute beatdown. 5-1 in the first game. And then the second game, 7-3. I think at one point it was 6-1.
Yeah.
So Boston just crushing there. The Bergeron line severely outplaying the Austin Matthews line. In the two games, they had 20 points combined, the Bergeron line, with David Pastrnak and Brad Marchand. Austin Matthews was kind enough to answer a question in that locker room afterwards. How do you feel about the Bergeron line outplaying you and getting 20 points in two games? He goes, well, it's hockey. Sometimes shit happens.
I love no filter Austin.
Just like, he's going to say how he is. What do you want him to say? He got outplayed. It's kind of the way it is.
Pretty much.
You'd come back in game three and get a goal. They would win that game 4-2.
Yep.
Freddie Anderson had to stand on his damn head in game three after being embarrassed the first two games, I feel like.
Yeah, and quite possibly the save of the playoffs, too.
With the dive across the crease on Pastrnak, who in game two had 6 points and has 9 points in three games.
Yeah.
How do you see this shaking out? You still think it's a seven-game series? We got game four here coming up. Do you still think Toronto? Did you have Toronto or Boston? I had Toronto in seven.
I had Boston, and I want to say it was either Boston in six or seven. My biggest thing was that
you had Boston in five.
Five, that's right. I did.
Five.
And that's still a possibility, and
I still think it is.
Kadri did get suspended, which we didn't even talk about yet. We can talk about that right now. Yeah, in the game one. But if you want my thing, I still say it could be five or Boston in six at this point. My biggest thing was, how is Austin Matthews going to be able to match up against one of the best shutdown forwards in Bergeron? And Bergeron, Austin Matthews never had to face that when they played Washington last year. And now they've got a guy who is not only can shut him down, but then his line is what is dominating.
Deadly.
Yeah, the whole series. So I still feel that that's still a factor. The fact that Toronto doesn't have Nazem Kadri right now, at least not for game four. Possibly he comes back game five, obviously, but I don't know how much of an impact he's going to be able to do at that point if Boston's up 3-1 in their series.
Let's talk about that hit. Kadri running amok in that game one.
Pissed me
off. Decides to hit Tommy Wingles, as Wingles is already on his knees, facing the boards, not expecting a hit, not eligible in my mind to be hit whatsoever.
No.
Not a hockey play. It's a dirty hit.
Mm-hmm.
Very dirty. Kadri also probably not very happy with the way the game was going, understandably, but you can't do that.
Yeah.
That's super dangerous. Throws his hip and butt basically into the back of Wingles' head. He bounces off the boards. He gets three games. I think that's right.
Yeah.
Not a hockey play at all. There's no reason to do that.
Yeah. All that can happen is you can seriously – that guy could have got seriously killed.
Man, throwing him way back.
Yeah, right? I understand maybe his frustration seeing both Chara and Wingles hit. I think it was Marner who kind of got hit. Maybe a little bit up high.
Cut an elbow. Whatever.
Yeah. You know, not good to see, especially when you're losing that bad. But to just beeline it to a guy, see him there, and not only hit him, lift up a little bit so that you and turn sideways. I mean, that's your hip bone, and that is all your weight, and that is your center of gravity, and that is all your momentum into the dude's head, if not his neck, his upper shoulders, everything that's you kind of want to not hit.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just it could have gone so much worse than it did. It's lucky, you know, nothing horrible happened necessarily for Wingles out of it, but it is absolutely a reckless play. It is stupid, and he let his emotions get the best of him, and this is a guy who's that same type of guy as Marchand.
I was going to say, he did his best rat impression. Yeah.
So he's habitual line stepper, stepped it again, and got caught with it. And it's absolutely worthy of a three-game suspension. We will see him in game five. Be interesting to see, because that one goes to Boston.
They got game four tomorrow at 4 o'clock Pacific time, so stay tuned for that one. That's going to be a goodie. Hopefully the Leafs tie this series up. But you're looking at a game – you're looking at five for Boston. I was looking at seven for the Leafs. Let's get talking about Pittsburgh and the Flyers. Their game four just wrapped up in the middle of our show. Now the Pittsburgh Penguins lead 3-1. Every single win, and yes, Pittsburgh has three of them, but every win in this series has basically been a blowout.
Yeah.
Game one,
like four
Pittsburgh 7-0.
Yeah.
Game two, Flyers win 5-1. Game three, Pittsburgh wins 5-1. Game four, Pittsburgh wins 5-0.
Yeah.
So the Flyers, I didn't think they stood a chance in this series, and it's pretty much going to be that way for them. I think, wait, did I pick Pittsburgh in five, and I picked Pittsburgh in six.
So did I.
So I did give him a chance.
Yeah.
But just not a big one.
Yeah, I mean, everyone was flying high a little bit on Drew coming in and how well he finished. It seemed like that Flyers team really kind of punched their ticket in there. And you kind of want to give momentum to a team that's really kind of going in there. The other question mark was Matt Murray after, you know, looking like the best goalie
in the world, right?
Coming into this season. Little shaky, not the Matt Murray we're used to seeing, and so that became kind of a question mark. Same as Elliott was a question mark for Pittsburgh, or sorry, Philly. But Matt Murray has quieted all those naysayers very, very soundly.
Dude,
he's gone nuts. He's been absolutely amazing. Following the 5-1 loss, where you almost get Philly back into the series, possibly. Not only did they win the next game and only give up one goal, he gets a shutout the following one. So chuck up, you know, one game where Pittsburgh was maybe, you know, thinking, oh, we got this, you know, 7-0.
Yeah.
So he's got two shutouts. He's got another game where only give up one. And then just one of those stinkers where the whole team kind of just didn't show up, thinking they just walk over it. So it's kind of an outclass situation. The same thing. Philly's got this problem where there's just, like New Jersey, there's just not enough goal scoring to go around.
We thought they had some depth, though.
Like, we thought so.
They got some good players. And honestly, we forgot to mention, they're missing Couturier going in. It's because who other than Radko Gudas-Smash is going to kill a player in his own practice on accident? Clipped his knee. He goes, and it
was like a hip hit, thigh thing, whatever it was.
They were doing two different drills. So one's going one way, one's going the other way.
That's what I saw. Okay.
Very common in every training camp or practice I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Just a mishap, and one of them crossed over into the lane. I would put that on Gudas because he can't skate as well as Couturier.
Yeah.
Couturier, you knew it was bad because he sat up and then threw his stick against the glass, and then he couldn't stand on it.
Pissed.
He knew he damaged his knee,
yeah,
and he didn't play, and he's a great player. He's up for the Selke Award,
yes,
one of the awards we don't care about, but we'll mention it here. Yeah. He's that good that he's...
If he's mentioned with Kopitar and Patrice Bergeron, I mean...
That's a giant...
Exclusive, an exclusive club to be a part of. And then when it's Gudas doing it, I kind of tweeted out, Gudas doesn't care what team you're on. You're getting hit. So it's a complete accident and unfortunate, but that just kills. And then they get shut out today. He didn't play. That is just so rough. But
this is a five gamer. It's done in Pittsburgh.
I can't see all of a sudden. The only way it comes back, it doesn't. Because Pittsburgh, a couple things I have to add. Pittsburgh would have to go, oh, we won this, and then not show up. And then Elliott would actually have to play well.
Dude, unreal how bad he's been. He's been terrible. And he was terrible last year with Calgary.
Yeah.
He's not a playoff goalie.
He's good when he was on St. Louis. And this is what I said about teams that have good defenses and the goalies all of a sudden seem really good. You move that goalie somewhere else where the defense isn't necessarily as good as what they're used to, and it can expose a lot of problems. Elliott is a prime example. Went over to Calgary, got swept by the Ducks, looked horrific. I think under 90 save percentage easily in those four games. Then goes over to the Flyers, signs 2 years, and is having another stinker with the exception of game two. But they are on opposite ends of the spectrum. When you look at Murray before today's game, 93 save percentage to Elliott's 86.3. And add into that now, Murray has a shutout, so that's obviously got to go up. So he's probably getting close
before to... Before today's game, he had a 9.29. He was almost a 9.3, right?
I think it was a 9.29. Yeah,
9.29
save percentage
for Murray. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to round up that 0.1 thousandth. So cut me a break here, buddy. But so Murray's just completely outplaying Elliott. And if Philly had any chance whatsoever, they needed Couturier in there to be their shutdown guy as far as forwards go. And then they needed Elliott to actually step up and be a good goalie.
How about you don't let Sidney Crosby have 9 points in four games either?
Easier said than done, my friend.
Killing it. Absolutely killing it.
That's another great point to bring up because guess what? He got two points.
Assist.
And that puts him at 173 points, which is the most for any Pittsburgh Penguin playoff performer.
Over Lemieux.
He leapfrogged him. He came in 1 point behind. He is now 1 point ahead. Fun little fact. Question time for you, Pat. Even though he leads the Pittsburgh Penguins, where does he rank all time? Meaning he's ahead of Mario Lemieux in playoff points. Where do you think he places?
Sixth overall.
Sixth overall. That would be incorrect, sir. He doesn't even place top 10.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's number 16 now, right behind Dennis Savard, back from the 60s. You have, sorry, that's when they were born, the 60s, Savard. But Fedorov is ahead of him, Ray Bourque, Lidstrom, Yzerman, Trottier, Doug Gilmore, Sackett.
Oh, guys who have played
Hall.
Three decades.
Yeah, Coffey, Jágr.
Two decades, you know what I mean.
Jágr, Anderson, Curry, and then obviously Messier and Gretzky.
So let me ask you this. Of Crosby, how many points does he have?
173.
Let's say he adds another 100. So he has 273. Where would that put him if you put another 100 up in his career?
Third.
Okay. So that makes sense to me.
Yeah. Now, if you added another 100 to that total at 373.
Then you got Gretzky.
He's still behind Gretzky by 9 points.
Oh, my God. So ridiculous.
So it's all right. All he has to do is triple his points, and then he'll have it.
He didn't play in the video game league that era.
Yeah.
Let's get on with it and talk about the last series in the Eastern Conference, the Washington Capitals and the Columbus Blue Jackets, every game ending in overtime. The Jackets lead this series 2-1.
I beg your pardon?
2-1?
I beg your pardon?
Am I wrong?
No. I just wanted to hear it again.
Yeah, 2-1. And
the Columbus
it's been incredible
yeah.
for them. The bread man leading the way,
Ooh.
Killing it right now. 2 goals, 5 assists with 7 points. He has one of the overtime winners.
For those of you who don't know, we're talking about Panarin.
Panarin.
The bread man.
The bread man. Okay. Artemi Panarin. Just slowly making everyone laugh at the Chicago Blackhawks with their trade with Brandon Saad. Because, wow, what a mismatch of a trade that was.
Yep.
Incredible for the Columbus Blue Jackets. Tortorella wasn't even pissed that they lost the last game on like a pinball machine shot.
Was
he was
insane.
Like, played our game. Just happened. It's hockey. Yeah. Whatever. We don't care. We thought we should have won. We didn't. Yeah. Columbus is killing it right now. And Holtby for the Capitals wasn't even your starter going into this.
Yeah.
That's the amazing thing. Philip Grubauer was the guy that was given the net. Holtby made an appearance last game, though. And looks like he's going to be getting the start here tomorrow.
Yeah.
So kind of turning things around for the Capitals. Ovechkin, you want to blame him? Ovi's got 4 points in 3 games. Can't blame that guy. He's still producing. How do you see this shaking out? We originally had this.
Well, I had this one going 7.
You had 7 for the Caps. I had Caps in 6. Mm-hmm. We're not looking too pretty right now. If they lose tomorrow, that puts us in deep trouble with our predictions here.
As far as
but,
Washington,
what's your take on the series?
It's like you said. Not only has all the games gone to overtime, no home team has won either. So if that all plays out, then Columbus should win in 7. I imagine that will probably change. But the fact that they're this close, it's kind of. It doesn't bode well for Washington because Washington, I would feel, kind of came in as more of that favorite team that should win.
The longer the series goes, the more I feel like they're going
to
lose.
And the more they go to overtime, the more I just feel like Washington's going to make a mistake or Panarin's just going to do something unreal or someone else. You can even throw in Seth Jones. Dude's played 3 games. He has 4 points.
Underrated guy, too, by the way.
Yeah, he's put up the most time on ice. He's averaging 32 minutes. Granted, all these games have gone to overtime, one going to double overtime, but that's 32 minutes of hockey. This dude is no slouch. He's putting up big numbers as far as eating ice time. He's hitting. He's making plays. So the longer this goes, the more I feel like it's almost that 9 thing at Washington and Ovechkin. You're not going to win. You're not going to win. And then you lose. And then where are you? Losing in the first round to Columbus.
They almost lost to Toronto last year.
Yeah. I mean, that one went to game 7, too. And then they ended up losing to Pittsburgh, their arch nemesis. I mean, then what do they have to look forward to after this?
Pittsburgh.
Unless Philly somehow wins it, which I don't see happening. So Washington's got a lot of uphill battles to go. They need to just focus on, so cliche, 1 game at a time. Because if you can go in and go like, hey, it's 0-0 right now. Let's play. That's a win. Boom. We're right back in it. It's a tied series. Holtby coming in, I think, is going to be a little bit of a boost. He played very well in the game he started. Grubauer, although was a better goalie down the stretch. Once again, it's just one of those goalies that, like Kincaid, the backup goalie, kind of helped them get in and get their position, and then just kind of fell apart along with the team. Grubauer had an 8.37 save percentage. 83% is horrific. 4.5 goals against per game. You can't do that when Bobrovsky's on the other side, quieting his critics from last playoffs at a 92.5 save percentage, very respectable, 2.64 goals against average. That guy's not been chased. He's looked very good. it's not quite the same Bobrovsky that I see in the regular season. So it seems like he's still kind of, for me, he could have a really bad game and can kind of falter a little bit. But he's looked solid thus far, and it's going to be interesting to see moving forward how many more games go to overtime. What is going to play out? I don't know. That's why I went to game seven, and I picked Washington. I still feel that could happen just because Washington cannot lose this series without really looking over the whole lineup and going, who's got to go? Because you almost got to start tearing it down.
I'll tell you right now who the next coach is going to be fired is.
Yeah.
Barry Trotz. Yeah. He's done. They're not going to be Pittsburgh. They're in their heads. Mm. If Washington somehow gets past the Blue Jackets here, and we all know Pittsburgh's going to crush Philly. There's no way Philly's coming back.
No.
It's going to be Philly and Pittsburgh, or Pittsburgh, excuse me, Washington. And the Capitals again. And then Pittsburgh is going to find a way to beat the Capitals, and then Barry Trotz is going to get fired. Just the way it is, and you're going to see sad memes and videos about the Capitals,
a whole
and
bunch of
Ovechkin,
Michael Jordan memes everywhere.
It's terrible. Yeah. But Trotz is done. If they don't get out of this series, especially if they lose to Pittsburgh next series,
didn't get to the Stanley Cup Finals, Trotz
is done.
Even if they get to the Eastern
Conference,
blow
the team up at that point.
Yeah, if they even get to the Eastern Conference Finals and they play like Tampa Bay or something like that, I don't feel they'd even beat Tampa Bay, but somehow if they did, that's the only way Barry Trotz keeps his job, because then they look that close. But they have a mountain of teams that they've got to try and beat. It's insane.
Let's get over to the Ducks and Sharks, our last series here to catch you up on before we get to some coaching issues around the league. I had Ducks in six. You had Ducks in seven.
Yeah.
This series is 3-0 Sharks going into it. This has been a horrible series so far for Anaheim.
Yes.
Game one, horrible second period, 3 goals allowed, and we're basically stymied. There was no effort for a third period comeback. Game two, a lucky goal by Silverberg to start the scoring, and a lucky power play goal by Hampus Lindholm as Jones was taken out by his own defenseman, Brendan Dillon, on the play. Sharks ended up winning that game. No problem. 3-2. Ducks weren't able to come back in there. Undisciplined, dumb penalties by Anaheim. Game three, an 8-1 blowout. Gibby gets chased. Vermiller, 4 power play goals by the Sharks. The Sharks, I don't know what you're going to do here if you're Anaheim, because the Sharks have just found ways to win. The Ducks aren't able to get anything, like, except for the exception of last game, and they lost 8-1.
Yeah.
They're not able to break through in the slot. A lot of their chances are perimeter. Jones hasn't had to make a 10-bell save. He hasn't been able to have to go cross crease back and forth and make these rebound chances. The Sharks are blocking everything in front of the net, and rebounds are being cleared. I don't know what the hell is going on with Anaheim, but it kills me to say it, but I'm about ready to finish the show with you and go watch them lose game four, I feel like.
Yeah, and there's not a whole lot of people that would disagree with you. Jones has looked in control from a goalie standpoint. There's no panic in his game. He gave up that one softy early on. Other than that, he has been lights out.
He hasn't had to do anything.
He hasn't had to. All the other 2 goals he gave up in this whole series, one, his own defenseman took him out during his shot. The other one was almost kind of like a whiff from Rickard Rakell.
Great location to whiff on it.
He kind of like shot it. He didn't get all of it is what I would say. It's not that he whiffed on it. He got it, but he just didn't get, because where it hit his stick and where it went, the puck, did a whole bunch of slow motion. That puck is flat when he hits it, and then all of a sudden is kind of at an angle, which tells me they didn't quite get all of it, and it's kind of at an angle, but it went back against the grain, posting in.
Yep.
Other than that, you know, what's Jones going to do on that one? If it had been anywhere else, Jones is probably blocking that
one. And that
was
a power play goal. Five-on-five goal, and that was Silverberg.
So you can call it, they're really going to, gut check time. They should have been there. Game one, they weren't. They should have been there a lot earlier in game two. They were not. Game three, they were actually not too bad. The first period went to San Jose. Second half, I thought the Ducks did pretty well. The Ducks actually outplayed San Jose for most of the second period. The problem was is every time San Jose got a chance, it was 2-on-1 and it was buried, or it was all alone and buried. It's not really Gibson's fault, although I have to continually argue with people online that Gibson is a good goalie, and as much as you think Miller is amazing, I don't think he would have done any better given the same circumstances as Gibson, and that was prevalent because he came in the third period, still ended up giving up 3 goals to Ducks in that game for the Ducks in game three. all over the place, the Ducks have to improve, especially team defense. I've never seen such bad team defense where everyone's just almost lost. About the only chance the Ducks really have, and this might be a little thing, is that Brett Burns didn't play a whole lot in the third period, was actually off of the bench, and didn't participate in the pregame warm-ups.
Said he's good to go in game four, though.
That's what the coach said, but he also didn't do the morning skate with the team. So it sounds like he's probably dealing with something, or they're like, hey, dude, we got this.
Yeah, just, we don't need
just
you.
Just relax. You know, go hang out with your bearded buddy, Joe Thornton, and you know, sip some Mai Tais.
See you around,
while we wrap this one up here in San Jose. So it'll be interesting. Kane has been a force. Kind of one of those things you go like, wow, they got him for a second-round draft pick. Maybe the Ducks could have got him for a second-round draft pick.
But he has baggage. Jason. Yeah. And we don't like getting rentals. He wasn't ever going to re-sign. Why would we want to do that in a closing window for Stanley Cup? Makes no sense.
And we draft really, really well, so that would have probably been a great thing to have, is that second-round pick. This guy was a second-round draft pick, could have given you that punch in the arm. Now he's on the team you're playing. That's where it looks really bad, when that guy's punching in goals and your team is struggling to find any sort of offense 5-on-5.
We will definitely have a Ducks-centric segment next show if they get bounced out of this first round.
What went wrong in Anaheim?
Yes. No, we definitely need that. But we'll be talking about that hopefully not soon. If they come back miraculously and win four straight,
then I'm right.
Yeah.
Then I'm right. Then I called it.
So the penalties. Yes. Sharks were 1-for-6 in the power play in game one. They were 1-for-3 on the power play in game two. 4-for-8 on the power play in game three. Ryan Getzlaf, Corey Perry, very undisciplined. Ryan Kessler, very undisciplined. Getzlaf getting the game for arguing over Perry's penalty in the third. You can't do that. This team is notoriously just allowed to run amok on the ice. Mm-hmm. I feel like Randy Carlyle doesn't have control of his leadership. I think that kind of stems down from Bob Murray, though. I'm going to be really difficult on Bob Murray if they get bounced in this round, or when they do, because I don't think they're getting out of it.
Yeah.
But you can only go after the players so much to look at the leadership on this team and be like, why are you taking penalties here, and why are you arguing with the referees? You're losing this game, and you're going to sit there and bark at refs and then go sit in the box. He got a 10. He got tossed. Just undisciplined play by the Ducks. You can't give the Sharks that kind of power play chances, because besides the third game, the first and second game, I mean, the Sharks were capitalizing, but the Ducks were right there.
Yeah,
I felt like a bad second period in the first game, and then that second game was really close.
Yeah,
third game is just, what the hell is going on with Anaheim? I don't know how they're going to fix this going forward.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, once again, that cliche. It's just that one game. They're not starting out this game down 8-1. They got to climb uphill. They're starting at 0-0. They've got that chance, that opportunity. They've got to figure a way to get in on Jones. That's no easy task. But if recent history is any indication, the San Jose Sharks have blown a 3-0 series lead against the Southern California team.
Let's hope it's the Ducks this time.
Yeah, so we'll see if that comes to fruition. That has only happened, including that last one, 4 times in NHL history.
Also great chances.
Yeah, but it has happened twice in recent history, both with Boston versus Toronto,
yep,
and then the Kings versus San Jose. So that's all recent history. So 2 of them have happened recently. Not to think that can't happen again, but chances are fairly slim, to put it nicely.
Single-digit percentages here.
But the big problem for me is the goaltending, and Jones just doesn't get rattled. And it's tough to do. And, you know, you say, oh, put more pressure in front of him, get, you know, in his face, maybe rattle him like you do with Jonathan Quick or something like that. A, this guy doesn't do that. B, San Jose doesn't allow you to get all the way there. And then, you know, C, I just haven't seen anything from the Ducks that makes me think that's what they're going to try and do.
Their offense, have you not seen it with the Ducks? They come in along the boards, and they cut back and throw to the point or try to hit the fourth man in.
Yeah.
And by that time that happens, everyone in the slot is covering,
yeah,
and there's no rebounds, and the shot's blocked. The Ducks do this whole thing where they come in,
yep,
cut back, look to the man coming in. Cut back, look to the man coming in.
They can't get anything into the middle. Everything's
rush
on the side.
Yeah, no plays in the rush.
Yeah.
So the Ducks are down 3-0, hoping to extend it to a game 5, which will be back in Anaheim on Friday. I don't want to go down a rabbit hole with Anaheim, because I definitely could. If you guys want to hear how I feel about it, you should look at the Forever Mighty post-game show that I do after every Ducks game. Hopefully we'll be talking about a win. Let's move on here, Jay. We got to talk about the coaching situations across the league. Glenn Gulutson fired by the Calgary Flames after two seasons.
Yeah.
he was a grumpy old man at this point, even though he's not old, very grumpy. He's only 46, so obviously he's not old.
Yeah.
But the team this past season went 37, 35, and 10. They really, really took a dump in the second half of the season, going 17 of their last 24 games losses. Not a way to get into the playoffs. They dealt with a lot of injuries. Mike Smith was injured.
That's the big one.
TJ Brody was injured. Sean Monahan was injured. Matthew Tkachuk was injured. Jaromir Jagr did not work out. He only played 22 games for calling it quits. Just not favorable for Glenn Gulutson.
Yeah.
But there's high expectations here, and they haven't been able to pull through. We're going to see where he ends up, but he's now the third open. He's the third coach to be relieved or retired. Mm-hmm. There's three guys that are now available, or three spots now available
yes.
across the league.
So, you know, so to comment on him, that's only 2 years, but this is a team that's almost kind of in that transition time where we need to start winning. They had a breakout year last year, surprising the league a little bit, getting in there, but they won absolutely zero playoff games. Getting swept by the Ducks. And then this year, they don't even qualify for the playoffs. Yeah, they had to go and deal with the injuries. They're not quite as deep as, like, Anaheim was able to deal with injuries and still managed to make it into a division spot in the Pacific Division. But they obviously want a little course correction. They feel they've got the talent there. They're just looking for the direction. And so he's on the outs looking in. At the same time, if the Ducks have a early exit, there's a possibility that Randy Carlyle is no longer.
No.
I'm just saying there's a possibility if he's out. And here's a fun little fact. Brian Burke was the GM of the Ducks, hired Randy Carlyle. He then became the GM of Toronto and hired Randy Carlyle. He is now currently the GM of Calgary and is looking for a coach. So there's a possibility you may see Randy Carlyle go back to a Canadian team and rejoin Brian Burke, although I'm not sure that would work out with a young team, but who knows? Brian Burke apparently does.
Alain Vigneault, also we mentioned last show, was let go from the New York Rangers right as their season ended. 16 seasons of experience, 11 trips to the postseason, a Jack Adams Award he was nominated
Kiss of
for.
Death.
Right? He was
nominated.
He didn't win it. He's been nominated for the Jack Adams Award.
He did win it 1 year, though, right?
I don't think so. He's been nominated four times.
I thought he won one for Vancouver.
Vigneault and former Stars coach Ken Hitchcock and Columbus Jackets head coach John Tortorella were the only active coaches last season to have been nominated for the award four times. Really? Really?
What?
Tortorella? Four times?
Well, yeah, I would think Tampa Bay when they won the Cup. Columbus last year. I mean, that's pretty good.
Whatever.
And then I don't know the other ones.
Alain Vigneault, okay. Maybe overrated. I don't know. He didn't have a lot of help in New York, I felt like, and definitely didn't have a ton of help in Vancouver after their cup run.
They went to the Stanley Cup Finals in 2014.
And that was about it.
It seems years ago, I know.
That
but
was four years ago.
Well, yeah, but they've seemed competitive with the exception of this year. You know, the team's going in a new direction. I mean, they already told their fans through, you know, a little –
Here's a memo. Don't leave
here's
us.
Here's a memo. Hey, things are going to suck here.
We're getting rid of some of your favorite players.
But just now, we have you in mind.
We're creating Rangers Rangers South
yes.
in Florida with Ryan McDonough and everyone going down there, JT Miller.
So the other knock on him apparently was that he would go to the old guard. He was more worried about getting the old veterans, guys he knows, guys he can trust, and putting them in versus some of the younger talent. And unfortunately, the NHL now is that young speed skill guys. And you gotta give them chances earlier than you're maybe used to doing old coaches. Kyle. And really giving them a chance to give your team a chance.
So Carlyle gets fired, and then Alain Vigneault comes to Anaheim, is what you're saying.
Ugh.
Yeah, I know, right? Not a huge improvement there.
It doesn't impress me. What's that song? Who sang that?
Were you going to go?
That doesn't impress
you're gonna
me.
You're going to go Shania
much.
Twain?
Yeah, was it Shania Twain?
I think so.
All right.
How terrible. We know that. We're old.
Yeah,
Ken Hitchcock. We're in our 30s. We're in our early 30s. We're not old yet. Ken Hitchcock, 66-year-old. He's definitely old as hell.
Young in planet years, though.
There it is. A 42-32-8 finish in 2017-18 was not good enough for the Stars to get into the playoffs, which is surprising. Many
I had picked one of the finals.
To make it to, not to the finals, but picked to the playoffs. We really thought the defensive first coaching mindset from the Stars was really going to change things up for them. It did not work out for them. He's third on the NHL's all-time leaderboard for coaching victories with 823. He's now a consultant with the Stars. hats off to him. I think he was a little bit overrated as well, considering he didn't do anything since 1999 when he won a Stanley Cup. But by all accounts, a great coach.
Well, I think fourth all time winning his third. Third. Oh, I'm sorry. I was way off.
Yeah.
Third. Yeah. So, yeah. So, third winningest.
Good, you know, he had some good teams. Yeah. He was
okay.
Able to field.
Yeah.
Just saying.
I mean,
the Blues.
Yeah.
The Blues were always competitive when he was there.
Okay.
Not in the playoffs, but okay. Always competitive. And then the Stars, it's too bad because yeah. I really felt the Stars were, you know, they had something going on there with John Klingberg on defense, looking at it as a Norris candidate, which is a mess
goals.
Right now. Yeah. And real quick, before we wrap, the Vezina Trophy candidates came out mm-hmm. as selected by the GMs across the league.
Pekka Rinne, not a big surprise.
Andre Vasilevsky, Connor Hellebuyck.
Yeah.
And as analytics extraordinaire, Rob Volman pointed out,
Oh
look, they're 1, 2, and 3 in wins.
Yeah.
How amazing. So there's how the GMs look at it. Who won the most?
No, that's not it. Because most of the time, to have those good wins, you're going to have the good backup numbers behind it.
You're going to have a great percentage team in front of you.
Well, absolutely. But at the same time, you have great goals against average, which means you have to play good defense as your team also has to play good
it's
offense.
Team stat.
Yeah, I know. But at the same time, those are good goalies. You can't
no,
deny.
They are,
you can't deny I mean, how great Vasilevsky is. How many behind the back glove saves was he making on Kopitar?
I'm on the hashtag Gibby for Vezina nomination, not for Vezina.
No,
win.
Just in my opinion, not even top three
nomination.
I'm
yeah,
sorry. Those other three were.
Hannah
were
had him top five. I had him top three.
I still have him top five.
He's right there.
He's right there. Almost. If he played more games and his numbers continue to span out that way, I'd 100% agree. Even if he never hit those 40
hilarious. We're
going to
argue about goalies
points.
Here, and yeah. I'm actually in favor of somebody here, and you're against him. That's rare that I'm the positive one and you're the negative one. It's very.
How am I positive? How am I not positive? Those three
you
guys.
You were negative against John Gibson right now.
Yeah, well, you got to be negative. I'm not even negative against him. I can have him top five. I just don't have him top than over those
you probably
three.
Have Quick
I'm, poor,
number four,
I'm more positive for those three
the
than
problem.
You are
that
for that one
that's
and a negative
problem.
Against those three. You're negative three. I'm positive one.
I'm lost.
No, wait.
That's
no, I'm
where
lost.
I'm at
I just lost my number.
All right, everybody. That's it for us. Go to gruelingtruth.net. That's where to find everything you need to know about us and other sports, podcasts, blogs, articles. Everything's there. As we said at the beginning of the show, if you know a writer or you want to become a writer, especially for hockey or you have a podcast for hockey, you want to start one, hit us up. We can help you do that and get you on the gruelingtruth.net. They get hundreds of thousands of views. So please hit us up and give us some love there. Also find us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, the Puck Guys Podcast. As always, we want to say thank you to all the fans. We have a prize coming still for Jared for the Fantasy Hockey League that he won. I'm waiting on a stupid package from Canada, which is yet to be here, Jared, if you're listening. I haven't forgotten about you.
Love
it's,
you.
It's the best part of the whole damn thing, too,
I
which
know,
I'm
yeah,
upset
yeah.
about.
So, it's that one thing?
Yes, it is that one thing.
Is it the signed one?
Yeah, no, it's the one that... I'll tell you after. Oh, okay. No, it's the one that's very pretty that you'll enjoy. So we have the gift still coming. It'll be there. We haven't forgot about you. We love you guys, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye, guys.